Today's episode of Recess Duty is brought to you by Flat. Flat is a collaborative music notation platform for all levels of students, from beginners to professional composers. With the ability to work offline when the idea strikes, or even collaborate in real time, such as a classroom, I have used it for years within my own classroom to let students share and explore composition in their own way. If you're looking to get students composing and collaborating together, or maybe even exploring the musical scores of a 5 million member community, check out Flat below and be sure to use the promo code RecessDuty to get 3-month premier access for free, an additional 3-month access when you email edu@flat.io. If your students are anything like mine, they will thank you. Don't wait. The code expires 1 month after this episode premieres.
Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. Today we're here with Kristen Durwood, who is a global educator for all and is always teaching me new things. We'll discuss her journey and experiences in education. Thank you for joining us, Kristen. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Levi. Thanks for pronouncing my name right.
Well, I practiced a lot, I'm not going to lie. For the listeners at home, we have spent the last maybe 10 minutes trying to make this Zoom call work. It has just been one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
It's crazy. It was like the computer wouldn't work, then the phone wouldn't work, then the sound wouldn't work. And then my phone decided to go into safe driving mode, which is really kind of crazy because I'm not in a car. But there you go.
And it just goes to show, you know, teachers are so flexible and we can always spin on a dime. So, Kristen, I can't imagine there's many people out there who don't know who you are, but for those of us who are new to PYP or Recess Duty, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? How have you gotten to where you are?
Okay, so me, I'm from Scotland. I'm born in Scotland and I grew up overseas. I was very, very lucky. I was my dad was a civil engineer and he worked on water projects in Africa. So actually my first school I ever went to was in the bush in Kenya. We lived in a work camp. And the reason I have slightly funny vowel sounds is I was taught to read by Australians. So I learned ay, bay, say. I was in some of, you know, the earlier international schools because I am a little bit older than I look. And transitioned around a lot of countries and was very privileged to learn and be part of very mixed communities of schooling. And so, you know, when I went back to boarding school in Scotland, it was a big shock for me. Mm-hmm. It was an even greater shock after my mum pulled me out of boarding school and I went to this incredible school called Campion in Athens in the 1980s with just the most wonderful teachers and had the most incredible learning experiences I can't even begin to explain. And then went back to Scotland, where basically all everybody ever wanted to talk about was, you know, Wham. And whenever I sort of tried to mention anything that had happened to me in my life was just, they said, why don't you go back there then if it was so good? So it was an interesting time when I was a teenager because I'd had this opportunity to connect with a very, very expansive world with lots of different perspectives. And then I was suddenly in a society which was very narrow and, you know, just shut up and be invisible or, yeah, you know, you're not going to be talked to. And so then going to university, I went to university in Edinburgh, was another sort of revelation to me because I found when I went to university, it was a whole different ball game because I was one of the very few people who went to university who actually was used to just talking to strangers and doing new things. And I wasn't shy in retiring and the initial university student. So I did my studies in Edinburgh as part of the Edinburgh University Theatre Company. We ran the Bedlam Theatre during the Edinburgh Festival Fringe and had lots of fun. When I left university, honestly, I was one of these people. I did not have a clue what I wanted to do. I had a degree in social studies, social sciences, psychology, English, and politics. And I ended up working in hospitality and I ended up traveling around the world. And then I said, you know, what am I actually going to do? I was 22 and I thought, okay, I wrote down all the things I was good at and all the things I wanted to do with my life. And I came up with two options. And one was join the Foreign Service and the other was become a teacher. So my mother was a teacher. And my mother had for many years been trying to encourage me into teaching. So I was working at this hotel as assistant general manager of this hotel out in Perthshire. And I phoned up and I said, Mummy, I've decided I'm going to apply to Murray House for teacher training. She said, you know, darling, I was really thinking about this and I think you'd be better off in social work. But it gets better. It gets better. In fact, it gets worse, because then I went home for the weekend and we were talking about it. And my dad said, I don't know why you would do this. It's a complete waste of a good brain and a good education. And my mum's sitting there, right there next to him, 20 years of teaching under her belt. And I was like, as a daddy, who do you really want teaching the citizens of the future?
Oh, no.
People who don't have good brains and good educations. I mean, really, it's quite fascinating how, you know, like this is something that I've seen in various countries now, like how sort of denigrated the perception of education as a career is when it is. But it is actually, it's so fascinating. It's so delightful. It's so important. It's so innovating. And reflecting on now, not necessarily the now of COVID, but, you know, the now of now, I'm so better educated than so many of my peers because I'm up to date on social media. I'm 52 years old. I'm up to date on social media. I know all about these different ways of learning. And I know so much that so many of my peers who, you know, might be in, I don't know, more prestigious roles or positions, they've got no clue about whatsoever.
Well, we're all on a journey, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Learning and trying new things. And absolutely. And I just want to go quickly back to your story about, you know, growing up in a very, I would say, secluded area, because with, and you growing up in the opposite and then going back to a secluded area, I had the opposite where I grew up in a very small town in the middle of Kansas. And then when I went overseas, I got to be experienced with all these people. And I do agree that it, I mean, there is reverse culture shock for a reason. And it really did just hit me over the head. But
when you went back to Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was great to see family and such, but it really was. And it just, again, just highlights all these amazing stories that we bring back to our homes and bring back to everything. And it's always very much, well, then how about you just go back there? And I'm like,
yeah, I think that's
why don't we just share? Why can't we just share all this fun stuff?
Yeah, that's the striking thing about it. It's like, you're weird. That's the striking thing, really, isn't it? It's like, it's you're weird, rather than like, okay, that's it, or you're boasting. No, it's just life. Like, it really is just life, and it's interesting and exciting and varied. And then one time somebody said to me, oh, you're so lucky. And I was like, lucky? I said, I suppose I am lucky. You know, I was born in the UK. I've got a great passport. Well, not anymore due to Brexit. But, you know, previously I had a great passport. I got a good education. So, yeah, I am lucky. They're like, no, you're lucky all the things I've done. I'm like, well, you could do them. Well, no, I couldn't. I was like, well, you could. Really?
I will never forget when I was, so for music education, we had to take 2 years of intense piano training. And I had my professor, Inga, and I'll never forget this. It was piano 4 and she was playing Rachmaninoff 2, I believe. And one of the students was like, oh my gosh, you're so lucky. You're so talented. And she looked him dead in the eye and said, I've worked very hard for this. There was no luck involved. And I was like, whoa. And it is, it really is. There is a fine line between hard work and dedication and being a risk taker and trying new things and luck. And I think we sometimes get those confused.
I'd agree. I mean, I think there are elements of luck as to what comes across your path in life.
Yeah.
And then it's like what you choose to do with that, you know. And I do feel lucky because, as I say, I'm a woman. I was born into a culture where, you know, women aren't downtrodden, where I got a good education, where I do have opportunities, where my passport and my, let's face it, nationality and blonde hair and blue eyes and so forth gives me an opportunity to go and do an awful lot of things that a lot of people, particularly women, don't have the opportunities to do. I mean, I know so many women who, you know, they can't leave their parental home, or they only can when they're married. And once they're married, a lot of the decisions are in the husband's control. So, you know, I do appreciate that. I have a lot of gratitude for that amount of luck. But then it's like things come across your pathway. And what are you going to do about that? Like, you know, my friend invited me to go after my mom died. My friend invited me to go out to Ghana. So I said, okay, let me go. And then I found myself a volunteering position in a place in Kumasi, and I lived with a local family. And then I went down to stay with my friend in Accra, and her friend was working at the international school there. And she said, oh my goodness, I have to introduce this PYP and I don't know what to do. And I said, do you want some help? Yeah. This was after 2 years experience of PYP. And so I did. And then they said, oh, we like you. Do you want to come in and do some work with our teachers? So I said, yes, okay, I'm here anyway. And then I met the head, and, you know, long story short, the next year that head was moving to Uganda and called me up and said, do you want a job? Do you want to come and introduce the PYP to the school in Uganda? And, you know, it was that lucky? Well, it was lucky that I was working in Turkey and I met Teresa, but everything else was, you know, significantly off what I decided to do.
Yeah,
with absolutely. That.
With having all this various experience, Kirsten, and you also absolutely are the embodiment of lifelong learning and always trying new things. And you're always popping into Twitter chats and being on Facebook and helping everybody get better with your learning. What are you learning right now? What are you working on right now that you're excited about?
Well, first of all, I'm making a face because I don't really think I do much to help people learn. I think what I do is more connect people and like support. What I believe I do most of is actually support other people's ideas and like bring them into visibility and help people to make connections with one another. So, but you know, you're asking me that question, like, what am I learning about at the moment? Well, there's two things really. Mm-hmm. One is I'm working on this event, as you know, mm-hmm. Inquiry Educator event. Well, that was never intended. You know, when I took this part-time role with Toddle, it was supposed to be in content creation and quality control. Somehow this event just popped up due to the pandemic and everything that happened in the pandemic. And, you know, it's been a most enormous learning curve. I mean, it's been wonderful. I've connected with so many people around the world. But this year, you know, trying to make this more kind of educator, I guess, sort of dynamic and educator invested and not so much about like, wow, look at these cool people that are doing these things, but trying to make this more constructive and putting together everything that we've learned about virtual learning and, you know, the need for people to be connected and how to bring people on to like share and connect and transfer learning and everything. That's been an enormous challenge and we're still working on it. But I've learned so much through that process. I've learned so much about, you know, ed technology, about different ways that we can connect and learn and different things like that. So, you know, that's one thing mm-hmm. on a sort of professional front. And on a personal front, this is very interesting because I'm a person that's always traveled, always moved around and been very, very nomadic. And even I think, you know, when I lived in Kuala Lumpur, it was the first time I'd lived anywhere for 4 years, all in a row, 4 years. But even then I was popping out to Singapore, you know, hopping up to Penang. We were coming over to Thailand, all sorts of things. I was doing professional sessions, different places, going up to visit people in China, spending my summers in Europe. I have not left Phuket for 2 years. And no, actually that's not true. I've not left Phuket for a year and a half, but before that I was in Bangkok. So, but I have not been on a plane since I don't know when. I can't even remember the last time I was on a plane. And this is really unusual for me, which is like, okay, I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky. Don't get me wrong. I'm lucky because I connect with lots of people all over the world. But for me, it's that actually learning to be in one place and what that one place has to offer.
Yeah.
Rather than bouncing around all these places and having all these amazingly different, diverse experiences, I think I was addicted to change.
Yeah.
And now I'm having to come to terms with, you know, being steady and actually making the most of what's around you in one place. That's a big learning for me as a person.
Absolutely. I know last summer I was able to go home and see my father, which I was very, very thrilled with. But I remember going through that terminal and getting onto that plane being just a crazy experience because, I mean, we go overseas, we do travel, it is the nature of our job. So when that big part is wiped away and it happens, you're just like, whoa. It was very surreal feeling for me. I forgot a lot. Like I forgot how I packed for a trip. I forgot how to put all my stuff in the carry-on. I forgot, oh, I got to take off my shoes. Oh my goodness. I was the worst person at the security checkpoint because I was just like, oh my goodness, I have my keys. Oh my goodness, I have my belt. I'm so sorry. So it was a crazy time.
You can see things sort of loosening up now. But for me, it's become like, you know, I left working at school and I was supposed to be going around doing, you know, different school visits and different workshops and everything. And then just going to India every month to to do the work with Toddle. And now I've been in one place.
Yeah.
And I've had to sort of reinvent what I'm doing, and I'm not connected with the school. And so it's been a sort of year a year and a half now of, well, who am I if I'm not a traveling educator?
Yeah.
Who am I?
Yeah.
And I'm not just a Facebooker, you know, but I am a bit of a Facebooker.
And a wonderful Facebooker. Well, with all of these things that are changing, what is something that you really reflected on over the past 2 years in education that has changed your mind? For me personally, it's been about planning. The fact that planning, I have never had kids more involved in the planning than I do now. And I am just seeing the rewards of the engagement, the depth of understanding of why we are doing something. And it's just been massive for me. So I just always ask, what's been changed for you?
You know, I think that's so cool that you see that this is such a positive, that you've been able to use this medium to involve more kids. Because if you think about, you know, what was happening a year and a half ago, and people were saying, oh my goodness, how do we keep engagement? How do we keep intention? How do we keep all of these things going online? And here you are saying, I've never had more interaction. I've never had more collaboration. I've never had more of this that this has provoked me to do. So, you know, I think what you said, it really connects with what I feel, which is about looking for the possibilities. And, you know, in life and in education, it's like we only have what we have, you know, we have what we have. And actually, when we think about resources, a lot of the resource that we have, it's ourself and our attitude and how we approach things and what we think we can do with what we've done, with what we have. And then it's also, in a way, being brave and removing ourselves from expectation. And this to me is like, you know, when I think about learning, when I think about the limitless learning, I have to remove the limitations. I have to remove the preconceptions that I might have of what the learning might be. But I also have to sort of stand back from the expectations that can be put on me or other, you know, as teachers have put on them by systems or schools or countries or whatever, and say, okay, All right, so that's what they want. That's fine. Well, let's look at the reality of what we have and what we're capable of. And I know people, you know, not just now in COVID, but all my life, and particularly in Africa, I've met people who've done remarkable things with very, very few resources. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not to, you know, I don't say that to make people go, oh my God, you know, I have to do better. I have a really good friend that I worked with in KL, and she would literally say, we're doing the best that we can. You know, you're doing the best that you can. You know, show up, do the best that you can, and make a difference in the way that you can. And, you know, people have different potentials to do that. But it's really digging deep and saying to yourself, what's the potential that I have to make a difference, rather than the what's expected of me?
Mm-hmm.
Because that in itself is limiting. Like, that in itself just makes you shrink. Because if you're so worried and stressed about meeting this target or delivering that part of the curriculum, you can't be joyful and creative like you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you can't look for what's the possibility here, because you're moving through fear. And for me, that's the same in life as it is in education. We have to avoid that the feeling of being limited and moving only because of fear that we might be doing it wrong otherwise.
No, absolutely. I cannot remember for the life of me, maybe you can help me, but I was reading a book, and I want to say it was by Brené Brown, but I'm not 100% positive, about how fear stops growth, about how our fear or nervousness of being wrong or being unsure or making a mistake stops us from trying new things. And it really does make a lot of sense. You know, we have, being in a very art-centric world, for me, music, I have kids all the time saying, Mr. Levi, I can't sing. Well, why not? Because I can't sing. I don't sound good. And I'm like, says who?
To who?
Yeah. I was like, says who? Like, no. Like, they're like, well, I don't sound like that on the radio. And I was like, they don't sound like that on the radio. They have,
no, they do.
They have millions of dollars of editing and everything else. Like, no. So it is about getting rid of those limitations and about opening up to what you can do and your best and being okay with that.
Are there possibilities? And also like finding the ways around things. I mean, you know, I used to teach art, and when I was at school, I was always told I was bad at drawing constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My art teacher for my GCSE said, oh my goodness, it's such a shame you're so bad at drawing, because you have great ideas, but you have no execution. I mean, I scraped to see in my GCSE. And then I did higher art in Scotland, and then I did a 6-year studies, which is kind of like pre-university level in art. And I had the most wonderful art teacher. And he helped me to understand that my art was color and expression. And actually, I'm quite good at composition, really good at color. Yeah, I'm not very good at technical drawing, but so what? But many, many, many years later, when I took my first PYP coordinator's job, the initial year was I was doing learning support. And the next year they said, we want you to teach part-time art. And I said, yeah, fine. So I told my brother is very good at drawing, really exceptional sketch artist. And he said to me, you can't teach art, you can't draw. And I said, I don't need to draw to teach art. I just need to understand each child's potential and help them to connect to the world as an artist. And he was like, oh my goodness, this is so airy-fairy, it's dreadful. But you know, I had the most wonderful time, and the kids had the most wonderful time.
Absolutely.
And I used this wonderful book called Drawing from the Left Side of the Brain to learn various techniques. But I also used the kids, you know, and I'd say, okay, so we're going to sketch this, and I'm going to get so-and-so to come up and demonstrate to you the different kinds of lines and shading that you might need. And they'd be like that, and they'd be watching, because this one thing I say, well, don't worry if you can't do it like that, because you're going to find your own style. And then you'd find kids who had great conceptual ideas. You'd find kids that had, you know, all sorts of artistic offerings to make, because you weren't limiting them. And honestly, I had parents say to me, it's the best art program they'd ever experienced. I'm not a qualified art teacher. But I did teach them structure. I did teach them, you know, how to look. And they did get better. Most of them, by the end of grade 5, were better than I am as a sketch artist.
Yeah.
Because I'd learned how to teach them that. Nobody ever taught me that. They just told me I was bad at it.
Absolutely. And I'm sitting here just in awe, because I like to think I'm trying that. I'm trying that because I do, as a music teacher, I do truly believe that my number one job is not to turn these students into Beethoven or Mozart. My number one job is to have them loving music more than when they came and met me. Whether that's K-pop, whether that's Vivaldi, whether that's Beethoven, whether that's Beyonce, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, they're going out there loving music and supporting music.
It doesn't matter, but you know, music is extremely challenging, you know, and I mean, you do a great job, and I know a lot of other music educators that do a great job. And I think my favorite, when I was in, when I worked at ISKL, the music rooms were enormous. I mean, you'd love them. The music room was enormous. Yeah. And we had two music rooms, and at the back end of each music room were four micro practice rooms, you know, so you could sort of have this exploration lesson and then have kids go off and try things. It's very, very difficult in a regular regulation music room that you find in most schools to have this sort of exploration phase where you might have kids trying out different things or experimenting with different kinds of music, because it is very, very challenging, I think, as a music teacher to give kids that opportunity to explore and experiment and try at things and find out who they are as a musician, because quite simply the environment is restrictive in that respect. Because
there are definitely, and I always connect it with math, you know, there are fundamental skills that are required for us to be successful moving forward. Like for us to perform together, we all must have an understanding of steady beat. But how we get there, how we get to an understanding of steady beat is where I really love, because it does not have to be so teacher driven. It can be student involved and student explored, but the destination is the same, but how we get there with everybody is very different. And that's what I really, really, really love about what I do.
To me, music teachers are remarkable. When I first started teaching, I had to teach music. We had to teach everything. We had a music teacher that came in part-time and taught singing. And I was quite famous because she would record the piano for us to practice the sing-alongs. My kids always came in at the wrong place because I just couldn't hear it. And I used to trade. I used to trade. I taught primary four and I used to trade with the primary two teacher. I'd take her kids for sport and she'd take mine for music. But then I realized that, okay, I can't do this technical stuff. Like I really can't. I can't hear it. I don't understand it. But what I can do is creative interpretive stuff. I can do communication. When I started to think about it differently, and this is where it comes back to like not limiting yourself and not limiting your thinking. So I started to come back to it and I thought, okay, well, music doesn't have to be all this, you know, yes, it's important that they learn to read notes and that they understand certain technical aspects of music. But if we're thinking about communication, there's different things that we can do. And so my class actually did amazing things. I remember we did, we recreated a street scene in sort of Mary Queen of Scots time by like going up into the old town and thinking about how, you know, what the sounds were that you'd make. And then they created a whole composition.
Yeah.
And we looked at the melodies of the time and we thought about what it might sound like and what the instruments they might have used and those kind of things. But they created their own composition. And that was one thing that we did. And another thing that we did, we created musical instruments, connecting our understanding of science to the sounds we wanted to make. Do you want to know the really funny thing about that particular project?
This yeah,
I thought
absolutely.
Was hysterical. This is a project I did in my second year of teaching. And my kids, my primary fours, they created these musical instruments with their understanding of movement, of tension, of different materials, of air passage, of all sorts of things, vibration, all sorts of things. And I thought it was really cool. So that was 1995. And of course, you know, barely had a camera then, far less the internet. Well, many years later, I was working in Uganda. We were having a big celebration because at that time, Harvard Project Zero, they had had a competition for middle school on transdisciplinary learning. And schools had put forward projects to be considered. And they picked 18 projects around the world as being like highlights of transdisciplinary integrated learning. And our school had been picked, was the only school worldwide that had been given two places on this. And so professors from Harvard were coming to Uganda to visit our school. I thought, this is amazing. Wow, this is incredible. And they said, okay, well, we're going to have this special launch assembly where we're going to demonstrate these projects. And this was with grade 7 students. And I went there and I was like, that is exactly what I did 20 years ago with my primary fours. They'd done the exact same thing. And so I said to these professors that came from Harvard, and they said, oh, you people are at the forefront of learning and your schools are at the cutting edge. And I said, you know, did you ever think that if you wanted to learn about the transdisciplinary nature of learning, that you might want to talk to some primary school teachers?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, that is very true. Oh, man. But I do agree, though. No, it's absolutely hilarious because I do. I mean, as a music teacher, I don't know very many music teachers that haven't built musical instruments with their students. It is one of the most fun activities and most fun engagements and of exploring, of cutting that instrument shorter and hearing that pitch go up and them starting to connect length with higher pitches. And why is that? Oh, because the sound that can't travel as far to make it as low. And it is a lot of fun. So Kirsten, we keep talking about giving limitless and making limitless learning. But to give that is really difficult. To allow that is really difficult for a lot of people. What do you say, or what can you do to help those people who have struggled to allow that limitless learning?
I just want to say, be brave and give it a go. You know, when I was a learning coach, I used to work with teachers and I used to work a lot in the science lab because it's where a lot of teachers, primary school teachers are a bit shy in the science lab. They're a bit scared of it. Not everyone, but it's you know, a lot. And so I worked with a lot of teachers in the science lab and, you know, we'd get to this stage and they'd sort of look at me and they'd go, this is where I have to let go. And I'd go, oh, you know, if you're ready, if you want to. But it is about just allowing that, being comfortable with uncertainty. That is what's really, you know, what's really important. It's, I think that's what, you know, we are so caught up in, you know, what has to be measured and what targets have to be reached. And, you know, this is what really excites me now about the idea of co-constructing learning criteria with children rather than, you know, this old style English style, you know, we are learning too, and you know, what I am looking for is a teacher. And, you know, I've had many arguments with people about this over the year, and they're like, your learning intentions and your outcomes must go up. And I'll be like, but why? Well, so the children know what they have to be learning. And I'm like, so that we're limiting the possibilities of what they could show me they're learning, you know. And I took just recently, I just did a session just recently, and I took an Eckhart Tolle quote, and it is literally be comfortable with uncertainty. And Eckhart Tolle had said, when you become comfortable with uncertainty, infinite possibilities open up in your life. So I had a little liberty with this. And I said, when educators become comfortable with uncertainty, infinite possibilities open up for learning. But if I'm looking for, in this learning engagement I put out, that every child is going to show me X, I've already limited it.
Yeah.
And I've closed down a lot of possibilities. So I'll give you an example. Okay. When I was teaching grade three, I used to do a lot of mathematical explorations. Now, my team, because they brought the Common Core into our school, they were being guided by the math coach, who was excellent in many, many ways, to follow this Engage New York program. And it was very directed, and it was very every day you did this, and then you had these certain, you know, feedback things that you did. And what I saw happen, instead of us having conversations that we used to have about what the kids were learning and where we might go with that next, it became, well, has anybody done number 12 yet? And who's done this? And I'd say, well, I'm not doing that. And they'd say, oh, you're off the plan. And I'd go, well, I'm working with the kids where they're at. So we had this whole piece on, you know, because it was grade three, we had this whole piece on multiplication. And I said, okay, well, we're just going to explore what is multiplication. And they said, how are you going to do that? I said, well, I'm just going to ask them what they know. And I'm going to say, let's choose a times table. All the kids know times tables. Choose a times table and prove it and show me what you think multiplication is. And I took a video of it. And it really was the most remarkable thing, what happened. Because the kids in my classroom, they were so used to exploring by this stage. But they were just, and I had one kid and he was going, oh. And I said, what are you doing? Can you explain to me what you're doing? And he said, well, I've made six groups of five. He said, it's a six times table. He said, it's six groups of five. No, he said, it's five groups of six. He said, it's a six times table and it's five groups of six. And I said, all right, okay, really? And then he went, but it's the six times table. And I went, uh-huh. And he said, but I've got five groups of six. Uh-huh. And he said, but it's the six times table. So it has to be six times something. And I just said, does it? And he said, and he started scribbling. And then he was doing, you know, six times one is six. And then he looked at it and he goes, so it's six times, it's the six times table of six times is at the beginning. And that would have to be sets of six, groups of six. Okay, yes. And he said, but if I had six groups, would it still be the six times table? And I said, I don't know. Why didn't you explore and find that out? And then, you know, 2 days later, his ability to explain what was going on in reciprocity was amazing. Other kids, three little boys, I've still got this, I think it's the most hysterical thing. They're like, oh, we've made a cube. They're like, miss, look, it's three times three times three. Because we did three times three. And then we thought, well, what if we did another layer of three threes? What would that be? And look, we've got now three times three times three, and it's a cube. And I said, well, that's what a cube number is. Is that what a cube number is? Well, what is it if it's just three times three then? Is that a special kind of number? And I said, well, look at it. You said you're holding the cube and that's a cube number. Look, they're like, is it square? Is it a squared number? I said, no, that's what a squared number is. This was all, you know, discovery learning, but we got actually so much further than we would have if I just taught them, you know, this is how to do multiplication. And then they were all with their facts within weeks, but we never did any fact memorization ever.
Yeah.
So I just say, be brave and embrace and use what you have.
I love it. Oh, okay. I'm going to be brave tomorrow, Kristen. Thank you so much. I love, again, I said at the beginning, you're always teaching me new things. And I greatly appreciate your friendship and your mentorship and just your all around kindness. Kristen, for our listeners.
Can I just say that I appreciate always, in case people don't know, I appreciate always that Levi is very willing to come onto my sessions and volunteer his time and talk about collaboration, and particularly on art sessions when I'm really not good at music, but to really come on and talk about learning and music in the arts. So I appreciate all of that support. I do. Plus the PYP chat, which you guys do, is amazing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you times two squared. So Kristen, for all our listeners out there in the world, where can people find you? Where would you like them to connect with you at?
Please don't. because my messenger never stops. Literally, I can look now, I go over and be like 25 messages going. Yeah, no, seriously. If you want to say hello, you can, I'm always on Facebook every day. So you can find me on Facebook Messenger. You can find me on Twitter. My Twitter tag is @LearnerFocused, and it's always good to connect with people there. It's really interesting. I've learned a lot about Twitter recently, to go on and just see. Well, I don't post a lot. I'm not a poster. I'm a commenter. That's what I say. Like, I'll see what other people have posted and I'll comment and I'll share it or I'll reshare it. You can find me on LinkedIn, Kirsten Durwood on LinkedIn. And, you know, if you're a PYP coordinator, join our PYP coordinator group on Facebook. If you're an educator, join our Global Educator Collective group. It's a cool place. There's lots of great moderators. There's lots of people sharing content and ideas there. And if you're an international educator looking at moving schools, join my Teachers on the Move internationally. And that's where people are sharing ideas, and you can ask about schools, and you can, some people even find jobs there. So, you know.
That's awesome. Oh, Kirsten, yeah. You always make me laugh. Thank you so much.
And also, if people are interested, you know, watch out soon. In three weeks' time, we're going to be launching the website for the Inquiry Educator Summit. It will be launched across social media, and it's going to be fabulous. And Levi's going to be starring in it.
Aww.
So what more excuse do you need amongst all of the other great educators that you're going to find there?
I'm very excited. I am very honored and blessed that I got to be asked, and I am very excited about it. I can't wait to join.
It's so different. If I can just say this, it's so different. We really took a lot of feedback. And it's very, very different from before. Of course, it's now going to be a properly constructed event. So it's a paid event, although all the main sessions are still live streamed for free. It's a paid event. But it's got a huge networking platform. There's a whole networking fun weekend. Then there's 3 days of really dynamic learning. And then, this is the bit that I really love, there's 3 months of transfer opportunities, which is going to be hosted watch parties, which is going to be strategy sessions with people on your network, which is going to be coming back, sharing your applications of learning and discussing them with like-minded people. I've got everything from job-alikes to educator authors sharing to school showcases, all sorts of things. It'd be like nothing you've ever experienced before. So very excited about it.
I'm so excited. Kirsten, we ask all guests here at the Recess Studio, what do you remember from recess growing up?
Oh my goodness. Oh, wow. I went to so many schools, you know?
Yeah.
And so many different things. And I think if I could just put that together in one message for people to think about when they're thinking about playtime and recess, is like how your school culture encourages kids to interact and be part of the school community. Because I can remember, you know, being in the playground in a school I went to at Al Kubairat Community School in Abu Dhabi. And we had, the school was collecting these, the cans, you know, the little pieces of the can tops. And we were sitting playing with them, and we were talking about why it was important to recycle. And I'm sure we did lots of other things, but that's a memory that stands out. But then I can remember being at school in my boarding school in Scotland, which is called Dollar Academy. And I can remember that we were sort of herded into these spaces, and there was a girls' part and there was a boys' part, and there were certain corridors you didn't go down. And you didn't really feel that you had any kind of connection with the school. I think, you know, on that, as an educator, I've been really lucky to work with several schools where they've allowed children to be part of designing the playground and designing the spaces, and to be thinking about how you actually interact and what are the opportunities that you have during that downtime. Mm-hmm. So I've had a diverse range of experiences, but I think that the one thing that I would hope is that kids feel included and they feel that there's a space for them no matter what they want to do, whether it's curl up and read a book, you know, run around with a ball or have a chat with some friends, that we encourage those opportunities in our environments during the recess time.
Absolutely. Belonging is very important in all stages, particularly now when a lot of our communities are finally reconnecting and getting back together. Yeah. Just would like to say thank you, Kirsten, for joining this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us in your favorite podcast app so you don't miss any of our next episodes. I'm Levi Allison, and have a great day of learning. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our recess duty.